It sounded like jungle sounds, mostly. I mean, the obvious monkey sound and deep bassoons and violas and some high-pitched violins and almost elephant-like sounds.
Humpback whales are among the largest mammals on Earth, but we rarely see them. To unlock the secrets of humpback behavior, researchers have turned to sound to hear what they cannot see. I'm Samantha Brown. You're listening to the Nature Stories podcast. Each week, we bring you stories about the intersection of people and place. This podcast is curated by Atlantic Public Media in collaboration with the Nature Conservancy and the Public Radio Exchange. Here's Songs of Humpback Whales, produced in the early 1990s by Lisa Bush and Robert Woolsey, who also narrates the piece.
All clear.
Almost all of us are freelance, independent, and running on our own resources. You know, it's the standard Alaskan independent way of doing things. I'm in control, and I think that's probably why I chose this route, rather than going to a job 8 to 5 every day. So you can get away with it up here. But in reality, when I tell people what I do and you're out in a boat and it gets real cold and stormy and you're dealing with rough seas, a lot of people go, well, that'd be fun once. People think it'll be really neat, but I think you have to be driven by a certain aspect of the science to do it over and over and over.
Jan Straley is a marine biologist whose specialty is humpback whale identification. Jan claims she works for no one, but in reality she contracts with almost every federal agency concerned with whales, including the National Park Service, the National Marine Mammal Lab, and the National Undersea Research Program. Jan studies the movement of whale populations, where they travel in their global habitat. On the underside of a whale's tail are white markings that Jan treats just like the FBI treats fingerprints. In her mug books, she has photos of hundreds of whales, tails up. Researchers in Mexico, Hawaii, and Japan take similar pictures, and then the painstaking work of finding matches begins. Until now, this was the only way to determine where whales moved in the ocean during their tremendous migrations. But the Alaska whale songs have changed things. Jan and colleagues who specialize in whale song suspect that songs may be at the root of the migratory mystery. Whales sing the same song throughout the Pacific. Somehow, somewhere, they teach the current song to one another. It may be that these elusive telltales are trading their secrets in Sitka, Alaska.
That first whale I photographed? I first photographed it as a calf in 1980. It's the second year I've seen it here. I didn't see it for 8 years. Then it showed up here. I said, whoa, it's great. I have not touched one with my boat or my hand. I'm surprised I haven't. I've been near them so much. Sometimes it's almost like you are an invisible or you're just a bystander or I pretend like I'm tiptoeing up behind them and they really don't know that I'm there. It still is exciting to be near a large group of whales. They are so big, it's overwhelming. It's almost frustrating in a way. I'd rather throw my camera away and be able to just watch.
Affiliates, 4956, Stellar J.
Stellar J, back to the J-Lean.
Yeah, let's try 1-8 on the big one. And 1-5 on the little one, if you have the little one, okay?
1-8.
The Stellar J is more luxury than Jan is used to. On her own bright yellow boat, she looks like some kind of maritime Annie Oakley, shooting pictures instead of bullets while riding herd among the whales.
I came to Sitka Sound to do other work as a biologist, and it just happened that I began to do humpback whale photo identification. I went out with my husband, John, to Seymour Canal on the eastern side of Admiralty Island, and we had radio tagged some geese. And they overwinter, and nobody knew where they overwintered in southeastern Alaska. I talked the Forest Service into letting me and John work as volunteers and stay in the cabin over there for the winter. And they flew us out there and gave us food. And that's how it all started, because we landed the airplane, unloaded all of our stuff, and stood there on the beach. And there were probably 50 to 80 whales within a two-mile radius of the cabin, just out in the canal. It was like a sprinkler system had cut loose. And we didn't see any geese. We tried. But the goose study pretty much fell by the wayside as we began the photo identification process of humpback whales. It was exciting telling people that these whales were here.
Humpback whales are among the largest mammals on Earth, but they spend their lives below the ocean surface. They are an enigma to scientists who can only glimpse their subjects as the whales surface to breathe, feed, or lunge bodily out of the water in gravity-defying leaps. Humpbacks are the virtuosos of the animal orchestra. Their eerie, plaintive courtship songs have lured numerous scientists to Hawaiian and Mexican breeding grounds for years. In the cold northern waters of Alaska, where the whales travel to feed, research conditions vary from the perfect calm of a warm afternoon to downright frightening, with blowing seas and freezing temperatures.
I'm limited by time and film and fuel, but that's enough to do a pretty good survey. I try to get out as much as I can in October because I can stay out longer. Once November and December start, I can really only last a couple hours. It's pretty cold. There's an eagle nest right up here somewhere.
Oh, there's one in that clearing.
Oh, back there, yeah.
Humpback whale sounds in Alaska aren't an unknown phenomenon, just a relatively unstudied one. Recordings have been made before by Jan and others over 10 years ago in the summer, but the combined problems of weather, logistics, and limited funding were almost insurmountable. The odds are stacked especially against a single scientist working alone in the middle of winter.
The actual work I'm doing, you know, is following whales, is trying to get in position behind them to get a good photograph. This time of year when I'm working in the fall and winter, light is so limited and weather conditions are limiting that I'm usually in a real hurry to get as many whales as I can in the shortest amount of time. So that often takes away from the excitement of being out among them.
Although Jan is primarily interested in population and behavior studies, she has tried to incorporate acoustics into her research. Unlike Hawaiian breeding songs, the meaning of whale sounds heard during feeding is not known. Jan thought that by matching whale sounds with the activity she observed on the surface, she'd gain a better understanding of feeding behavior. Luckily, hydrophones, the underwater microphones used to hear whale sounds, have come a long way since her first attempts at recording.
I have done other recordings, but it was a long time ago. And actually, when I've recorded sounds before, it was like a pain, because somebody gave us this hydrophone and tape recorder, but it was in this huge box. It was like 3 feet by 3 feet and weighed about 100 pounds, so we had to lug it into our boat. It was like we used it more for a lunch table than doing any recordings. And so that's what I thought recording was until I realized the systems are far more compact.
Pretty breezy out here at Eastern Channel. About a 20-knot wind. White caps, or as they say in England, white horses on the water. Got 3 or 4 whales quite a way, a couple miles. We're going to approach them real, very carefully. Try to get way over to the side here. Looks, I can't tell yet which way they're going, although it does look like they're pretty active. Maybe they are feeding, so we'll skirt way around them and
the Stellar Jay's captain, Bill Foster, had a modern compact hydrophone, though he seldom used it. Whales are spread few and far between in the summer, when Bill is most often on the water. A recently retired marine biology teacher, Bill finally had time to listen this fall, when many more whales, anywhere from 50 to 80, had gathered in Sitka Sound.
We were out there in the fall watching this great abundance of whales, and turns out they were making a lot of sounds. and probably because we had never used a hydrophone in the winter before. We'd always used it in the summertime, and we'd had some success with it. And now I can kick myself for not using it years ago when they were here in the wintertime. I'm sure we would have heard those.
Uh-oh, we got one ahead of us now that's a couple hundred yards, so they're scattered out here, so we're going to have to be careful. We can't go on our planned route. We'll have to slow way down here and look, see what this straggler is doing ahead of us. I didn't see him. He's right ahead. And so we may have to change plans. Actually, I think we can probably go between them because that one's going that way and we're still a pretty good distance away.
We're not seeing much here. They're just lolling around on the surface. Just pods, groups of whales, one in singles and pairs, maybe a trio. There's a pair right now that are diving in synchrony together. Fluke up dive.
One there and what, one or two, at least five or six in here?
Yeah, at least. The birds are active, so there must be some feed here. They're just doing subsurface feeding. Just the standard whale behavior where they look like floating chocolate chips on the water and they fluke up dive and that's it, and you don't see them till they come up again.
Oops,
sea lions right there. So that's a good indication there's probably herring around.
Yeah. Oh, look at them.
Yeah, there's like six.
Yeah,
we might get some good sound here.
Okay, you want to stop here and try it?
You know, I would go, let's go over that way and then drift through it.
Okay, yeah. Okay, maybe I can get around the side here. Coast Guard was down in Eastern Channel the other day.
Yeah, it hovers right over them.
They were actually practicing, but I think they are looking at them.
I think they are, too.
Because I've seen them come around when they've been there, and a lot of times they stay up pretty high. But...
You know, there's an FAA rule that says that airplanes and helicopters can't fly. They have to keep a 500-foot distance away from flying over people.
Mm.
Is a hydrophone in the water?
Let's get that in. And
the whales.
They're all down now, so it'd be a good time to
Let's get it. Let's see what we can do, and then looks like our drift's going to be actually.
Are you
going to
put it on the downrigger?
We may have to circle around, but.
Bill realized that he was hearing something extraordinary in Sitka Sound in the fall of 1991. He told Jan, who decided to collect her own acoustical data.
Bill kept telling me that the whales were making a lot of sound, and I went out and made the recording. Made a number of recordings, but the first one was really the best. And to tell you the truth, it was twice as good, but for some reason the first half of the tape didn't record. Sounded like jungle sounds, mostly. I mean, the obvious monkey sound and deep bassoons and violas and some high-pitched violins and almost elephant-like sounds.
Jan thinks these sounds are a combination of social vocalizations and what acoustical experts call whale song. It takes a trained ear to know the difference. At a November workshop in Seattle, Jan met with Salvatore Sergio, a researcher based at Moss Landing Laboratories in California. Sal spends 2 months each year in Hawaii studying whale songs.
We've met for the first time in Seattle at a meeting of the North Pacific Humpback Whale Working Group.
and she played this tape for me, and I was amazed. It was some of the most amazing sounds that I had ever heard come out of a humpback whale. Most of the sounds that they were producing, the non-song sounds, were totally new to me. Humpback whales are known for having a vast amount of different types of sounds they can produce. The Alaska tapes had sounds in it that, again, they reminded me of the first of all, the whales just wailing away, just screaming their little hearts out, like almost in this agony, which is kind of interesting. It's kind of funny. They seemed very excited about whatever they were doing. And then there was that monkey sound that had that sort of chirp. It was like, just went on and on and on over and over again. And God, they did that for long segments of time. That was really bizarre.
For the most part, they aren't thought to sing on the feeding grounds. There is a recording that has them singing on the feeding grounds during this time of year. And bits of songs are also heard during the summer, too. So it wasn't that we didn't know about it. It's that we're just finding out the extent of what is going on in terms of their vocalizations.
I remember as a child watching a National Geographic special and hearing humpback whale song over the TV and being mesmerized by it. But I'm also a musician, and music is very important to me, I think. So that's a theme that seems to run through a lot of marine mammal researchers. There's a lot of cetacean researchers are musicians as well.
This is humpback whale song, recorded in Hawaii. Listening to whale song, you can understand why a musician might be seduced by science.
Humpback whale song, you have very specific stereotyped patterns of vocalizations repeated over and over and over again, and it makes up a very complex pattern which itself is repeated over and over and over again. That's quite different from what we call social sounds. They are much more spontaneous. They can be repetitive, but in a monotonous way. Humpback whale song seems to have a function in male reproduction strategy. It's been hypothesized that song will be used like bird song to attract females or as a competition between males. All the males sing essentially the same version of the song. This pattern changes over time, and all the animals seem to pick up on the changes and incorporate the changes into their own personal versions of the song and keep up with the current version. Songs were the same from Hawaii to Mexico. When that was first shown, it was very surprising because these were thought to be separate populations. But the fact that their songs were the same within a given year and they changed in the same ways from year to year meant that these animals were not only in the same population, they were communicating in some way. If there are whales in Alaska that go both to Mexico and Hawaii, well, they're going to hear the version of the song that was sung on the other breeding ground and incorporate it into their own. We may see here in these feeding songs the way that Mexico whales and Hawaii whales maintain the same song over, many, many years.
When I was with him, we only listened to a small part of the tape. And he was trying to explain to me the themes and phrases and what to listen for singing, because to my ear, it all sounds alike. He was pretty excited, especially when he heard part of the theme that was a little bit different than what he heard in Hawaii last year.
The The other thing about the tape, in the background, there was definitely a singer. There was a whale singing a typical song that I recognized very well as the 1991 version of the Hawaiian humpback whale song. Now, that's very exciting because whales are supposed to sing on the breeding grounds. Now, songs on the northern waters, the cold waters, they've been recorded before in Alaska as well as in the Atlantic, and it's hypothesized, and I would agree with this, that the animals would be getting ready to head down to the breeding ground. So if song is hormonally triggered, it makes sense that the breeding hormones start flowing while they're still up there in the autumn, and that triggers not only the instinct to start the migration and head down south, but also the instinct to start singing.
It's only the males that sing for the most part. So is it a cueing when they start singing up here for everybody to think about leaving? And the females going, oh yeah, I'm about ready to come into estrus. I better get out of here. So here I am in the cold water still. So I think that's the next step.
And all this talk about whale song, it's strange to think that no one really knows how they produce this incredible range of sounds. Whales have the largest vocal repertoire of any animal, but no vocal cords. Whales keep that mystery to themselves. The wind has died down now, and the afternoon has become clear and sunny. A group of whales is headed this way. In one of the most dramatic maneuvers in nature, called a breach, a 40-foot humpback, the size of a Greyhound bus and over twice as heavy, will hurl itself out of the water, then crash back to the surface in a leviathan belly flop.
Oh!
Yeah.
That is unbelievable.
That's a true breach.
How many
out of the water. Scientific American.
Ton per foot.
Greatest.
I'm pulling back. A ton per foot.
Greatest single. Most dramatic single event by any animal is a whale breach.
Why do they do it? I'll give you an article on it.
Yeah, I've got an article too. Why whales leap?
The one I gave you.
Yeah. And the bottom, I'll save you from reading it. They don't know.
Yeah.
They just know that humpbacks breach more than any other species.
Give me
a
lot of theories, though.
Oh, what? Communication?
No.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, form of communication.
You know?
Form of travel. Mm-hmm. Form of a gesture, like shaking your fist.
In the stillness of the afternoon, the blows of the whales almost seem to echo off the water before drifting into the steep, forested walls of this bay. Several whales, I'd say at least five, are at the surface now, and the hydrophone has gone strangely silent. Their approach is a little unsettling, but only fair. If I'm not mistaken, the whale watchers are being watched themselves.
I was in Frederick Sound this summer, and it was a frustrating experience, but at the same time, it was almost magical or mystical. We were just surrounded by fog for hours and hours, and there were probably 50 whales just surrounded our boat, just feeding. We were just in amongst them, and that was neat because you could hear them, but you couldn't see them. I mean, the fog was very, very thick. Visibility was probably 5 feet. And so the whales could be right next to the boat, and you would just see basically a silhouette.
Okay, this whale came to us, and okay, you're going to get the blow. This is probably a 40-foot humpback. Ton of foot. Bigger than the boat. Heavier than the boat. Can do whatever they want. So we should get another good blow here. It should come up again. It's moving pretty fast, so.
They went right under the boat
and
didn't say a word.
Oh, Alaskan whale songs may show that singing is no longer strictly a breeding behavior. Songs may even trigger the migration south. Scientists like Jan Straley and her colleagues are using songs to rechart our understanding of these magnificent creatures, the humpback whales.
You know, I didn't choose whales. They kind of chose me. And I was studying geese, and suddenly these whales were there. But why continue and study them? When I found out that so little was known, I think it was intriguing. Well, here's something where I could really contribute, where I'm living in a place and these animals are right out my front door. I can study these animals every day of the year. Well, every day that they're here, if I want to. And even when they're not here, that's significant. So I can continue contributing to their natural history and their biology and still live here.
That vintage piece was produced in the early 1990s by Lisa Bush and Robert Woolsey. You can stop by the Public Radio Exchange at prx.org to hear more stories like this one. The Nature Conservancy provides support for this podcast online at nature.org/stories, committed to protecting nature and preserving life. Send your thoughts and feedback to podcast@tnc.org. I'm Samantha Brown with Atlantic Public Media in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. Join us next week for a brand new Nature Stories podcast.